The Inner Voice Show is a dialogue between the host and the listeners about their relationships. This show is not an attempt to assess, diagnose, or treat any mental health or illness condition. Please consult your physician, psychiatrist, or psychotherapist for personal matters.
Inner Voice. A heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain and have Sean in studio. This is an opportunity for us to chat today about you, about your life, about your comments, about your relationship and what matters most to you. Now, in this show today, I will bring you the latest research about marriage, and I will talk to an expert, Dr. Robert Johansen, who's also the author of the book Making Love. Yes, you heard it right, Making Love. And we're going to then take your calls to hear your comments, your questions, and hopefully we'll be able to have an amazing chat together. So call the studio line 951-922-3532. We'll be right back.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice, Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian has a direct approach to getting you to free your mind. Inner Voice is a live call-in show where you can chat about your life and all that matters to you in your relationships. Inner Voice, Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian, Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk, KMET, 1490 AM, and on the Internet Stream.
Were you recently injured in a car accident? Then you need the law offices of REF Datacar for your free case evaluation. Don't let the medical bills pile up and don't let the insurance companies try to settle your claim for a few hundred dollars. Call 714-464-3246. The law offices of REF Datacar serves all of California. If they don't win, you don't pay. So call now, 714-464-3246. This is a paid-for attorney advertisement by the law offices of REF Datacar of Orange, California.
So we have 8 facts about love and marriage in America. Now, published February 2018 by Pew Research Center, the landscape of relationships in America has shifted dramatically in recent decades, from cohabitation to same-sex marriage to interracial and inter-ethnic marriages. Now, let's go over the 8. So, the first one is love tops the list of Americans' reason to marry. About 88% cited love as a very important reason to get married, 81% making a lifelong commitment, and 76% companionship. 30% have their relationship recognized in a religious ceremony, and 28% for financial stability, and 23% legal rights and benefits were all among the very reasons that people wanted to marry. However, being a good financial provider was seen as a particularly important for men to be a good husband or partner. About 71% said it was very important for a man to be able to support a family financially to be a good husband or a partner, while just 32% said the same for a woman to be a good wife or a partner. Now, as far as what helps people to stay married, 64% said having shared interests, and 61% said satisfying sexual relationships. 56% said sharing household chores really helped, especially with fights and for them to have a successful marriage. Now, the second one is half of Americans aged 18 or older were married in 2016 and share that has remained relatively stable in recent years, but is down 9% points over the past quarter century. One factor driving this change is that Americans, particularly men, are staying single longer, maybe because they actually do need to be able to provide. The median age at first marriage had reached its highest point on record, 29.5 years for men and 27.4 years for women. Marriage declined most among those with high school diploma or less education. As the U.S. marriage rate has declined, divorce rates has increased among older Americans. For every 1,000 married adults ages 50 and older, 10 have divorced. Among those age 65 and older, guess what? The divorce rate tripled. Wow. The number of U.S. adults cohabiting with a partner is on a rise. Now, in addition to half of U.S. adults who are married, the number of Americans living with unmarried partners rose 29%. Roughly half of cohabitors are younger than 35, but cohabitation is rising most quickly among Americans age 50 years and older. Those are interesting numbers. We could actually talk about the reasons of some of this, maybe. Now, remarriage is on the rise. 4 in 10 new marriages include a spouse who has said, "I do," at least once before. And in 20% of new marriages, both spouses have been married at least once before. Remarriage is more common among men than women. Among previously married men, those who were ever divorced or widowed, and 64% took a second walk down the aisle, compared with 52% of previously married women. One possible reason for this disparity is that women are less interested than men in remarrying. Go figure. Never heard that one before, but that's interesting that the statistics are that. You know, men always think that women are the one who really want to get married. Among previously married women, 54% said that they did not want to marry again. Interesting, compared with 30% of men. So the fifth one is 1 in 6 newlyweds, 17% were married to someone of a different race or ethnicity. This reflects a steady increase in intermarriage. So 11% white, 18% of black, 29% of Asian, 27% of Hispanic newlyweds married someone of a different race or ethnicity. Intermarriage is more common in certain metropolitan areas as well as in urban rather than rural areas. The sixth one, public support for same-sex marriage has grown in the past 10 years. About 1 in 10 LGBT Americans, 10% of them, were married to the same sex in 2017. Now, a majority, 61% of all same-sex couples who live together are married now. Sizable minorities of married people are members of a different religious group and their significant other or identity with a different political party. About 39% of Americans have a spouse who is in a different religious group. Many of these interfaith marriages are between Christians and those who are religiously unaffiliated. Meanwhile, 77% of marriages and partnerships belong to the same two political parties. So Republicans with Republicans, Democrats with Democrats. That's probably better now because now they would really have a fight. Eight, Americans are increasingly looking for love online. 41% know someone who uses online dating and 29% know someone who has entered a long term. Actually, I heard more about 75% of people right now are using online dating. Not necessarily that they got married over it, but they're using online dating. But 29% actually knew someone who has entered a long-term relationship via online dating. And they're not just swiping right and to the left and having casual relationships. The growth in online dating can be seen particularly among young adults. The share of 18 and 24-year-olds who use online dating has almost tripled in recent years, especially because there's so many apps out there, which makes it easier for them. So for the most part, people today review online dating very positively. So don't go anywhere. We're going to actually come back with Dr. Robert Johansson. He's a psychologist and the author of the book, Making Love. And then we're going to talk to you. So call us, 951-922-3532. We'll be right back.
Dr. Fujian Zane is a psychotherapist, a marriage and family therapist, and a life coach with more than 27 years of experience. She is the author of the Awareness Integration Model, which has been researched and published in numerous international journals. Dr. Fujian has offices in Beverly Hills, Irvine, and Woodland Hills, California, and also consults online and by telephone. Make an appointment with her today by calling 818-648-2140 or go online to www.fujian.com. That's www.fujian.com.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the Awareness Integration Path to Create the Life You Want by Dr. Fujian Zane. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the Awareness Integration Path to Create the Life You Want. You deserve it.
Well, welcome back to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zane, and I'm so excited that I get to talk to Dr. Robert Johansson. He's a psychologist who has been in private practice for approximately 40 years and co-founded Cerrito Psychological Center. He has taught a range of psychology courses at several Southern California colleges and universities, including UCLA, and he continues to lecture at various seminars, conferences, and workshops, training professionals, therapists, and students. Now, notably, Dr. Johansson presented his treatment model on NPR and at the California Association of Marriage and Family Therapists annual conferences. In collaboration with Dr. Todd Gaffney, Dr. Johansson developed a couples treatment model called Need Management Therapy and wrote the book Making Love, explaining the model. I have actually met Dr. Johansson first time when he was presenting his model at the MFT seminars, and then have had the privilege of having him on my television shows a couple of times. So I read the book. It's an amazing book. So I really recommend it to all of you. You can get it from Amazon.com. And we have the opportunity to talk again. So welcome to the show, Dr. Johansson.
Thank you very much, Fujian. And thank you for that kind introduction.
Oh, of course. So obviously you work a lot with couples, and you heard a little bit about why is it that people get married and what works for them so that it actually keeps them married, not only keeping them married, but keeping them happily married. You know, people can just be married for years and years and years and kind of tolerate whatever is going on and kind of feel suffocated and then kind of not live in their marriage, but survive their marriage for many years. But you have worked with couples to bring that type of satisfaction and love back into the relationship. So tell us about that.
Yeah, you know that we're doing our best to do that very thing. We demand a lot of our intimate relationships. In the book, we write about how very, very complicated the intimate relationship is. It's sort of in a league of its own, shouldn't be compared to any other relationship that we're a part of. When you think about it, it demands contradictory things. On the one hand, we want our relationships to be stable and satisfying and predictable. And yet, on the other hand, we want them to be exciting and passionate and full of lovemaking. And many times those are two difficult things to put together in the same relationship. And we want it to go on over a lifetime. That puts an enormous...
We want the passionate sex and lovemaking to go on for a lifetime.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Not an easy task.
No, it takes a lot of responsibility and accountability from each member to recreate the novelty and the openness and the communication and, you know, with every day of talking to each other and because we have to negotiate all day with our mates and how to do that so that we can not be resentful when we're not going to get our way every time and to be able to still come connected in that passionate way and love each other every day and every night, then you have a beautiful way of arranging that communication between couples. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, thank you, Fujian. I'm glad you feel that way about it. We're pretty confident in it ourselves. We take a basic idea, like how do we learn to love ourselves? How do we learn to love others? And a lot of that occurred in our first relationships. Of course, that's with our parents, those that gave us care early on. We learned how to relate to self and other. And so we use that basic idea to try and come up with a model for how couples can both create, enjoy, and sustain their closeness, their intimacy over a lifetime. So we've reduced what good parents do to three basic ideas. They are the identification of the child's needs, the underlying validity or legitimacy of those needs, and then how children can grow into those needs and represent them in age-appropriate and socially appropriate ways. Now, that's how it happened in essence, in the earliest relationship. And so we're saying that that's exactly what should happen in the current day intimate relationship. That is, in the presence of the other, in relation to our close intimate others, we ought to be able to identify our needs. That constructs who we are and maintains a sense of who we are. Intimacy can be is wonderful. It confers so many fulfillments, but at the same time it can be notorious for taking us apart as we try to avoid conflicts and keep harmony in our relationship. So this first step of identifying what our needs are is a very crucial one in terms of maintaining a healthy sense of who we are in relation to our partners. The next one is to validate those needs. And we're claiming that most, if not all, of our needs that we bring to our partners are in their most fundamental way legitimate. And given that legitimacy or validity, they should be actively managed. Not to do so is to become someone in relation to our partners that we don't fully like.
Robert, although all of our needs are legitimate as we feel them and we want them, I think what can be a bit off is that we have the need, but sometimes we have the expectation that our partner is supposed to know our need and no matter what, fulfill our need at every moment, or we're going to be angry, resentful, and hold them in contempt at all times because they're not fulfilling our expected need. Can you talk a bit about the expectations that we hold instead of kind of, you know, being responsible for identifying, like you said, our needs and how to communicate that to our partner in order for them to be joyous about, you know, fulfilling our needs?
The question's an excellent one, Fujian. You know, as I said earlier, in the fundamental sense, our needs are legitimate. Sometimes people question me on that, but if you look at the deepest level, an example would be had a young woman come in who was very, very jealous, and to the point where she was stalking her boyfriend, and she presented for therapy, came in for therapy, and was very, very embarrassed by the reason for coming in. And when I mentioned that in the fundamental sense, her need was legitimate, she said, "What? How could that possibly be?" And I pointed out to her that her jealousy and her stalking are certainly not good management of a more fundamental need, which was to feel secure, to feel safe, to feel loved, to feel valued. underneath that stalking are lurk those deeper, more fundamental needs. So it's not the fact that we bring to our partners fundamentally illegitimate needs. It's the fact that we mismanage those. And one of the reasons we do that is because the need is indeed valid in the fund.
I think you're saying an important factor to distinguish, though. I think that you're talking about underneath some demand that we might have from our mate, there is a fundamental, pure, original need. So if we can, which they do in therapy with you, if we can identify that fundamental one, then we want to find better ways of communicating and managing the fundamental versus a person thinking that what I'm demanding at this point is legitimate, right?
Exactly. The most common one that I get in the treatment process is people have this basic need to be respectfully, sensitively understood by their partner. Ironically, when they feel that they're not being understood, however they frame up their need in some form of communication, when they feel they're not being understood, they become angry at their partner. Because after all, their need to be understood, respectfully understood, sensitively understood, couldn't be more legitimate.
Right.
But when they get angry, they mismanage that need to be understood, and then they bite the hand that potentially would feed. They alienate their partner. Their partner becomes defensive, and now we have set the stage for the next marital war.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's important for each person to become aware of, for example, when you talked about jealousy or demands that they have, or somebody can be tired. We talked earlier about how important it is for people to feel fair in the way that in the relationship they're taking on responsibilities and chore. So any type of need that is underneath it, if it can be shared in a positive way, then there's a beauty that can come because your mate can understand and would love to satisfy it and fulfill it versus when it comes out as a demand or an attack.
Exactly. Then the one that needs the understanding for the legitimacy of the
communication skills and formula.
Yeah. I think we talked over each other there, but I agree. It's not that we bring to our partners illegitimate needs. It's the fact that we mismanage those, and we're tempted to do that because, after all, those needs are fundamentally legitimate. If you're my wife and I want your understanding, what could be wrong with that? But how I go arranging for that understanding is crucial. That's what we call poor need management. So we say couples are not having problems because they bring to one another basically illegitimate needs. It's the fact that those needs are being mismanaged that causes couple problems and conflict. And, of course, conflict extinguishes passion and closeness.
How do you suppose someone can share their needs when they identify it so that, you know, we'll let the partner know that they need that, they want that need to be fulfilled?
How do you manage the need?
And how do you communicate it? Yes.
Yes, yes. Let's suppose, again, that you're my wife and I need your sensitive understanding about an issue that's very important to me. We often talk about intimate relationships requiring work. If they're going to pay off in the myriad fulfillments that they can provide, we have to work at it. So here's one way that we're proposing that be done. Let's suppose I need your understanding about something very important to me. I've had a conflict at the office, let's say, and I need your understanding so I can feel supported and for the experience, difficult experience I've had. So when I approach you, I'm ready to have your understanding and support. You may not be ready. So I must first set the stage. I've identified my need to get your support. Is it legitimate? Of course it is. But now I have the task of managing it in a way that will create the most effective audience in you, my partner. So we suggest that we invest a little bit of respect in our partner to begin the conversation. This takes time and energy. I may do that by asking if you, as in a simple way, do you have a moment that we can talk about something very important to me? Notice what I'm doing here is I'm giving you a yes or no option. That shows you respect. If I merely come up, as you pointed out, Fujian, if I come up and say, I need a moment. I've got to talk to you. Something horrible happened at the office. Well, I'm under-respecting you and over-respecting myself. That can create a tension between us right from the beginning, and the communication can break down. On the other hand, if I invest a few moments of other respect, I respect you, my partner, then I'm elevating the chance or making it more likely that you'll be willing to listen to me because I've first shown you respect. A simple analogy is if I go to the local bank, I can't take money out of that bank unless I first put money into the bank.
That's right.
Simple analogy. So that's the first step in the management of the need. And then the next thing I do is I tell you about how important it is to get your understanding. I might point out the last time that you were able to provide this for me, I was left feeling respected and cared for. What this does is continue the respect of my partner and points out exactly what my partner can do under this similar circumstance to offer their caring understanding. I tell my partner about the crisis I had and how I felt at the time and at the office, and then I go on to explain to her how much it means to me to have her understanding. It's a simple formulation, but what's happening here is I'm by expressing the deepest feelings that I have about her listening to me. When you listen to me in a kind, sensitive way, I feel cared for. I feel closer to you. I feel your respect. I feel your support. What I'm doing is getting close to myself. I'm realizing what my deepest feelings are, and I'm expressing them to my partner. That pulls her closer to me. Now, I can say that I will be no closer to my partner than I am first close to myself. I've achieved an intimacy within myself first as a necessary first step to obtaining intimacy with her. Does this take time and energy? It's a mechanic. It's a mechanical thing of sorts. It's a formula. But when I stay close to that formula, I increase the chances of a good piece of communication between myself and my wife.
You are so right on about this, because most of the research has shown that human beings, as you know, in their genes, they have empathy and they want to be helpful to other people. This is let alone people we love and we choose to be our partners. There's a part of us that always wants to satisfy and get approval from our partners. So when we take the first step of respecting them, in knowing that they have the ability to comfort us, understand us, give us empathy, give us love, because that's why we actually went at the beginning and, you know, chose them to be our partner. It's tapping into that part of them so they can listen from the part of their nurturance and love coming to us. So that's how we're actually requesting and setting it up, by tapping into the part of them who will give us love and understanding. Having respected them and us in setting up the space of listening for what's important for us, then we're also respecting ourselves and allowing ourselves to be intimate and vulnerable within ourselves to be able to share and first say what it is that I want from my partner, which is letting them know that I want your understanding. I want your ears with your heart. And at the end of it, this is, you know, what I want. And then begin is where you're saying that we respect both. We're creating intimacy first inside of ourselves and then extending it to external and outside to our partner. And that creates a higher probability of that conversation going well, and for us to create and fulfill our needs, right?
Absolutely. We're in agreement again, Dr. Zane, exactly. that need you pointed out for empathy is mediated by chemicals in our brain, and it starts off with our parents. It's a fundamentally legitimate need to be empathized with. A good parent looks over into a child and sees what's there in an empathic, attuned way to what's emerging developmentally. And that, and when the parent attends to that, then that child is learning both who he is and how to relate to others. And so that's why we say in the marriage relationship, the second intimacy, we can call it, similar processes must go on. And when they do, the self gets constructed, it gets put together and maintained in a context where it could easily be erased, because intimacy, as I said, can be very complicated. We want to reduce the strife and the discord and preserve the harmony. And so we can sometimes overdo that and then erase the sense of who we are. So by identifying our needs in this way, we're being empathic to ourselves, as you pointed out, as the parent, original parent was to us, and then recognizing that our needs, say, the need to be understood by our partners over some issue, could not be more valid in the fundamental sense. So it must be managed effectively. And then we elevate, as you were pointing out, the probability of getting that need gratified.
So what if, Dr. Johansson, there is actually something that my partner has done, and I am furious, I am angry, and my complaint is about them, and it's my communication is going to be actually confrontational with them, because at that moment, I'm pissed, frankly. It's not somebody else I'm pissed at. I'm pissed
That's
at
right.
you. So
and you know,
let's talk a little bit about that. And you have a beautiful, beautiful way of communicating that, too. So share that with us.
Oh, good. That's a good one. I'm glad you brought that up. I would say this to you, that you could not be as upset as you are or were it not for the fact that your need is legitimate at the deep level. Would you expect all that upset if your need were not legitimate?
Right. It must be very important to me.
Exactly. Now, here's the problem. If you manage that need that's so important to you in a way that arouses the defenses in your partner, in other words, you impose a non-negotiated demand upon him for his audience to how you've been offended, then you're going to activate defenses in him. You're going to make him angry back. He's going to defend himself, and now you've lost his audience to the importance of your need. So the antidote, the remedy to that, is for you to engage in good need management, which begins in this very work-like way where you have to invest some time and say, I could sure use a moment of your time. Now, if you're really upset about it at that moment, you may not be able to do that. It gets a lot harder. So we have a little exercise that we call doing the history. After your upset has subsided, and it will subside, you come back to your partner and you ask him for a moment of his time, staying close to these steps of good communication. And while it feels impersonal and businesslike, it's far more effective than if you scream your need at him and he becomes defensive, and now you've lost your understanding and support. You come back after you've settled and you say, you know, I thought about what I said earlier. I was angry with you because I felt that I wasn't being understood. It would mean a lot to me if I could get your understanding. Notice that when I go through this type of communication, I'm talking about myself.
Right.
I'm making references to myself, and I'm avoiding making negative references to my partner. Once I do that, I lose him or her.
Exactly. So what I'm also hearing from you is to be cognizant that no matter how much I have intense emotions or upset about a need that has not been fulfilled by the other person, to still identify what's going on with me and understand that I'm responsible for kind of calming down my emotional outrage and manage. That's what you call more than anything, managing my own state in order to be able to then communicate with my partner what my need is in an appropriate way so that I can get that. But if I just attack the other person, all I'm going to do is to have them also go into an attack mode or taking care of themselves, so they won't be able to hear me. So if I want their listening for me, I have to manage myself before I can actually go to them and have them try to take care of me. We're talking to Dr. Robert Johansson, the author of Making Love book. And if it's okay with you, Dr. Johansson, we're going to go and come back. We're going to listen to some of the other people that need to be on our show. And then we'll come back and talk a bit more about the approach that you have. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Dr. Robert Johansson talking about his method of loving each other and the author of the book, Making Love.
Shake me loose from this vine. I challenge my enemies, the ones that say...
Were you recently injured in a car accident? Then you need the law offices of Aria Thatakar for your free case evaluation. Don't let the medical bills pile up, and don't let the insurance companies try to settle your claim for a few hundred dollars. Call 714-464-3246. The law offices of Aria Thatakar serves all of California. If they don't win, you don't pay. So call now, 714-464-3246. This is a paid-for attorney advertisement by the law offices of Aria Thatakar of Orange, California.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice, Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fushan. Dr. Fushan has a direct approach to getting you to free your mind. Inner Voice is a live call-in show where you can chat about your life and all that matters to you in your relationships. Inner Voice, Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fushan, Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk, KMET, 1490 AM, and on the Internet Stream.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fushan Zain. You can get it now at Fushan.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
Dr. Fushan Zain is a psychotherapist, a marriage and family therapist, and a life coach with more than 27 years of experience. She is the author of the Awareness Integration Model, which has been researched and published in numerous international journals. Dr. Fushan has offices in Beverly Hills, Irvine, and Woodland Hills, California, and also consults online and by telephone. Make an appointment with her today by calling 818-648-2140 or go online to www.fushan.com. That's www.fushan.com.
You're listening to Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fushan Zain, and I'm talking to Dr. Robert Johansson, psychologist and a developer of a model called Need Management Therapy, and the author of the book, Making Love. So Dr. Johansson, we were talking about how to create a communication, which you actually, not only that you take in, responsibility to understand your own need and responsibility to take action in creating a setup where you respect the other person, yourself, create intimacy and vulnerability for yourself and the other person in a setup where they can, you know, you can fulfill your own need in the way of requesting. And how do you support the person or the audience who are listening in finding their need and managing it in a better and a healthier way?
You know, that's a good question too. You certainly can't manage what is not known. So we often help people direct them by virtue of their feeling. What do you feel strongest about? most of the time, people can first identify strong feelings, and then we try to point, gently nudge and coach and point out that there are deep needs that are fueling or generating those needs. And those needs are those feelings, excuse me, and those needs that are generating those feelings should be identified. And in doing that, again, the self comes together in this very difficult relationship, the most complicated relationship, intimacy. So they are, as we pointed out, fundamentally legitimate, and so they should be actively managed. Now, the way you were defining things just moments ago, it may sound like this is very self-centered, and it is, but in the positive sense of self-centeredness, how can I be expected to maintain, create and maintain a love for my partner if I don't like the person I am in the presence of my partner, in the right. potentially fulfilling and complicating presence of my partner? So ironically or paradoxically, that is, when I am someone I like in relation to my partner, I am much more inclined to be kind and respectful of my partner because it works for both of us.
Right. Right. So it actually takes a lot to respect ourselves, love ourselves, know what it is that we want, know that we have the right to fulfill our own needs, and that other people are not out there to, they're not expected to fulfill, but they are the people who are going to fulfill. So it's how is it that I can create the space for them to fulfill? And then what are the prerequisites for that to happen is knowing what my needs are. If I need safety, if I need love, if I need someone to be with me and hold me, if I need understanding, if I need excitement, I need something novel, I need something for us to do something that makes me, for us to rest. But it's two components. One, how do I take care of myself? And then how do I communicate it lovingly to the person who's in my world in order for us to do that? There's also this piece of listening, because like you said, the world and my marriage is not all about me, of course, although I want it to be, but it's also how I listen to the needs of my partner, because their needs always have to, or I would attempt to hopefully be able to fulfill their needs. Can you also talk a little bit about that in a few minutes that we have left, in how to have that kind of a loving and compassionate listening, how to take it when our mate comes forward with their needs in front of us and we're not ready for it, or we might feel guilty about it, or we just don't want to fulfill their need because it doesn't fit with ours. How do we handle that?
How do we handle differences between our needs at a given moment? Your need might conflict with mine or be at variance with it. To respond to the point about listening is an act of caring and respect for the other. And our model builds that in on the first step of how we manage our need or represent our need to our partner. Remember, we ask for our partner's time. We listen to what their current agenda is, what they expect to be doing in the moment. We show respect for that. That's a form of listening. And listening can be categorized or subsumed under the larger idea of respect. It's one form of showing respect for our partners, to listen in a sensitive, attuned sort of way. When we do that, we are contributing to the health of the relationship, the moment-to-moment health of the relationship, which is always changing by virtue of how well we manage the needs we bring to each other. So when I listen, I'm showing respect for my partner. I'm investing in them and increasing the chance that they will do the same for me. Now, here's another point in all of this that I think you've touched upon, and that is another component of this model that we're talking from, need management therapy. A component to it means, a critical component means that I place the moment-to-moment health of my relationship in a higher priority, position of higher priority, that's my number one priority, over getting my immediate personal need gratified. when I do that, I'm actually meeting high needs within myself. The need for a good, stable, satisfying relationship should take precedence over any immediate personal gratification of my needs. So I do that when I show respect for my partner. Now, here's the magic in all of this. When I do that well, I actually increase the chances of my partner gratifying my needs, because partners who are mutually respectful of one another are more likely to gratify each other's needs, even when those needs are incompatible or at odds with each other. I can still show a respect for the person of my partner, even if we don't share the same interests or the same desires at the moment. We can always enter a compromise and negotiation, because we're trying to keep the self and other scales balanced. We're trying to address the highest priority for both of us, which is the ongoing health of the relationship. Staying close to these steps ensures that.
I think what I'm hearing from you is the choosing us, choosing the we, is much more important when we are in a relationship than just choosing the I that is just me separated from the we. Because if I choose both of us, then I will respect myself and my needs and my partner, although there might be a difference between them, but the attempt of finding the best way that will satisfy both, whether it's a third way or in one situation is theirs and in one situation is mine, is really honoring the us and the we that we've created. But if at every turn I just say, no, my needs are more important and I will go back to what my needs are, then I'm destroying the whole us, we union that I created. So then I'm living kind of a single life into a married life, into a partner life. And I have an expectation that I can just live my single person and fulfill my needs and just kind of have my partner having to fulfill mine, while the us and the we is the reciprocation. It's the go back and forth and honoring both of us in there.
Yes, yeah, that's another good point. When I manage my needs effectively, the only way I can do that is to keep my partner there. And we point out that when I manage my needs well, I don't have to worry about the we, the our, the us, because that takes care of itself. Because in managing my needs well, and I can't manage my partner's, I'm not responsible for theirs, not in the direct sense. Of course, I want to support and love my partner to the best of my ability when I'm feeling, ideally I want to do that, when I'm feeling my best, I'm best positioned to do that. So the good management of my needs makes it possible for me to be more attentive and respectful and caring of my partners. And then the we, the our, the us, is a natural artifact, a natural product of good personal need management. Now I'm making the ongoing health of the relationship my highest priority as I take responsibility for the effective management of my needs.
Got it. So it's not that I'm being selfish in managing my need, but managing my need is the area that I do have control over, I can do something about. And it's it's not only the beginning and the start of all of it, but it encompasses where the us comes into that system. Thank you so much, Dr. Johansson, for being with us, for explaining, for describing the model and how a couple can be together in a way of looking at their needs into the relationship being legitimate. They are in a relationship in order to fulfill, you know, their own needs. That's why they form relationships. And more and more is about the awareness of what those needs are, which most of the time shows up in a different way when we are in a relationship versus when we are a single person. So to honor as the needs show up, to honor how to manage them, how to fulfill them, how to communicate so that it can be fulfilled, and respectfully to ourselves and to the to our relationship. So how could people find you?
Through the book, which it's at Amazon, as you pointed out, and I think I have my email address. We do have our email address in the back of the book. And I'm online at Cerritos Psychological Center, our website. You can get a synopsis of the book. Your YouTube presentation that was published in November of 2015, and then November 2016, you and I have a good conversation in which we lay out our thinking on all of this.
Exactly. Thank you so much for being with us. And it's been a pleasure talking to you again. And yes, everyone, you can also go to my YouTube channel. And I've had two other face-to-face conversation with Dr. Johansson, which you're more than welcome to also listen to that. We didn't get a chance to talk to some of you. And sorry about that. We're having a juicy conversation. A couple of people called and had to hang up. But we do want to talk to you. We'd love to talk to you. So come back on next Monday at 3 o'clock and be with us. Make the phone calls. Call, you know, the studio line so we can have a chat with you. If you need to call me or actually email me with some of your questions or people conversations you want to hear, go to my website fujian.com. remember, there's a beauty into your relationship and you deserve to have an amazing one, and you're the one who can create it. Take good care of yourself. Bye-bye.